now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Great weekend. Great weekend. We have Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems. She is in Denver with the Diamondbacks. I saw her yesterday at the stadium as Jody makes her whirlwinds. She did some radio yesterday around the Cardinals victory. Jody will join us our Monday get together brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. Jody Jackson's Gems coming up in about 10 minutes. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. John and I could go, Jody and I can go a half hour. John and I could go a half hour, hour easy on everything going on in college football. Nationally syndicated columnist John Wilner, the Wilner Hotline. What does he make out of Arizona after getting jack stomped Friday against Kansas State? What does he make out of Arizona State being 3-0? USC Michigan this week. Who are some of the potential landing spots for the Pac-12 as it sits there after this first round of expansion? And much more as we do with John Wilner every week. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their support. Let's see, where do I go here? I'll go Thursday because we haven't talked since then. Thursday, I watched the ASU game. Friday was Kansas State U of A game. Saturday was just a whole bunch of games. And yesterday I was at the Cardinal game. So a little bit of everything, which is my kind of weekend. And the weather's starting to turn, so golf is going to be on my radar because I just got tired of being out 108 degrees. So I worked my tail off this weekend, as did our staff. They all do a great job. Our chairman of the board, by the way, is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong with this show, anything goes wrong with the show at all, it's his fault. That's it. The Iron Man. So in the NFL, and this is not Brad being a downer. This is just when you meet a team, sometimes is a part of the deal. The Cardinals met the Rams yesterday, and they just destroyed the Rams. Are the Cardinals 31 points better than the Rams? I don't know. For one day, they were. The Cardinals could beat basically any team, if their defense gives up just 10 points. Everybody's talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. and Kyler Murray, and they should. I'm one of those that always tilts my head and says, you know, a team gave up just 10 points. You give up just 10 points, you're going to win double-digit games. That's how it's going to be. And if you look back to the Buffalo game, the defense, yes, Josh Allen made some great plays and the score showed one thing, but I thought that there were moments in that game. And remember, they've had some injuries on the defensive side of the football right out of the gate. So I'll get over to Harrison with Jody, and I'll get into Kyler with Jody a little bit, and I'll do that here some. But yesterday was complete. It was complete. And yeah, the Rams lost Cooper Kupp. And yeah, they didn't have Puka Nacua. And yeah, their offensive line was beat up. And doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The fact that Matthew Stafford was still out there taking snaps with his team down 31 was pretty impressive to me. That's his way of saying, yeah, we're going to get our butts kicked today here in early September, but we're going to be better the next time that we play. I like seeing that of any competitor. On the Cardinals end of things, what can you say? It looked like Anquan Boldin is a rookie. It looked like Larry Fitzgerald is a rookie. Marvin Harrison Jr. was everything. They fed him early. Fed him early. Get him going early. Don't try to force it. Kyler did his magic with his legs. Kyler was decisive. Let's not forget James Conner had huge holes to run through. Let's also not forget that the Cardinals have had their share of injuries on the offensive side of football, especially on the offensive line so far this season. So a 41-10 jack stomping of the Rams, and you do it at home where you have these three home games in a row. The Lions are here next, and then Washington comes here after that. The Lions, Jared Goff makes some decisions that if the defense played like it did yesterday for the Cardinals, the Buda Baker fourth down knockdown of Cooper Kupp, keeping him short in the very first part of that game yesterday, was the difference maker, in my opinion. We can all go back. Football really comes down to about 5 to 6 plays a game. If you watch football long enough, and I've been doing it 40 years, usually 5 or 6 plays where everything turns. The game is decided on 4 or 5 plays thereabouts, maybe 6, but not double digits. Something happens. Yesterday it was Kyler's mobility. It was Harrison's footwork. It was Harrison diving to the end zone. It was Gardeck getting 3 sacks. I count that as, you know, a part of it. Make up my rules as I go. And Buda Baker's 4th down on Cooper Kupp, bringing him up short. 5 plays, 6 plays. And if they do that every game, they're going to win a lot of games. 10 points. Over on the offensive side, it was fun to watch. It was balanced. There was not a side of it where I was saying, why are they not feeding Trey McBride? Why is it all they're doing is throwing air? There was none of that yesterday. Marvin Harrison Jr. should get targeted 10 times. 18, I guess I should call him. 18 should get targeted 10 times minimum per game. So now they have Detroit here. And Detroit, physical team, Dan Campbell, his mentality, his quarterback makes some mistakes. Jody and I are going to go through that here in a few minutes with Jody Jackson's gems. On the college football front, so, you know, a few weeks into this, I love the fact that Washington State beat up on Washington. I'm one of those that is rooting for the Pac-2 because these presidents that screwed over Oregon State and Washington State for their own benefit, in my opinion, up in the Pacific Northwest, and I'll throw UCLA and USC in there too. I'm not going to put ASU, and I'm not going to put U of A in there because, in my opinion, they should have been in the Big 12. The Big 12 makes more sense. Arizona State, this Saturday, they play at Lubbock. It's like an hour and 40-minute plane ride, I believe, hour and 45. And it's a day game on FS1, much better time slot. You go to Pullman, and you're on, first of all, you're on the Pac-12 network, so nobody's going to see it. You're playing a long, long plane ride. Not that there aren't going to be some longer ones when they go play at Cincinnati later this year. I get that. But the distribution of it is going to be that much better. I can't help that the ASU-Texas Tech game this Saturday will be on opposite Michigan-USC and Oklahoma State-Utah. I just know that I'm going to be loving every minute of Saturday. Arizona, sitting there at 2-1, gets blown out by Kansas State. Kansas State's really good. And that is and I'll talk to John Wilner about this in a bit. Tough environment to play. K-State looks like one of the best teams in the Big 12. And so for Arizona State to go to Texas State and win, that's the best win on their schedule so far. Yes, they beat an SEC team, which will move the needle with a lot of people. That Mississippi State team stinks. They paid Toledo to show up in Starkville, and they beat them. Toledo goes to Mississippi State and beats them on a payday. I think it was $700,000. Me getting ahead of myself a little bit, let's just say that Arizona State goes to Texas Tech. Now, Texas Tech can score a lot of points. You win there, you're 4-0, and you have Kansas, who, in my opinion, is not very good. And then you have Utah, who's really good. And I think there's starting to become a little bit of a buzz because in this town, you just have to win a little bit. In this town, you just have to win a little bit, especially over there where they've been so far off the roadmap for so many years. And we'll talk to John Wilner about that shortly. The Hometown 9. I think they're going to make it, but I've had a few friends that have said, this is it. This is the last game I'm coming to this year because they're not going to make the postseason. They're up in Colorado, then they go to Milwaukee. These 3 games that they have at San Diego, or against San Diego, I should say, at the end of the season, now appear more than ever to be games that are going to decide if they're going to make the postseason or not. And here come the Mets. The Mets were just terrible early in the season. And Seawall's now not part of this thing. Jordan Montgomery's got to give him something here in the next 2 weeks. Fott's run out of gas. Ryan Nelson's gone on the shelf. So, big Jordan Montgomery, $25 million. Give something, please. Give anything. All right, Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems is coming up next, and then John Wilner. I'm Brad Sussmat. She is a gem. She is Jody Jackson. She is brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. Jody Jackson's Gems on the road, as you can tell. That's not your house.
No, it is not. And yes, once again, happy to be with you, Brad, for our gem segment. Love E.D. Marshall, and glad to be joining you during this crazy time of year on a Monday morning. I mean, there's so much to tackle, right?
So, first of all, you're in Denver. The audience is like, where the heck is she? You're in Denver, and you're going to be with the Diamondbacks doing DBTV. Your road trips are almost done, right?
This is the final road trip for the Diamondbacks. Yeah, so you look at 7 games this week, 3 Colorado, 4 Milwaukee. So it's a heavy dose of Milwaukee, which we knew.
Yeah.
And then they come home and are going to have that final homestand. So this is literally the last 2 weeks of the season right now.
Is it the last 2 weeks of the season? I'll get over the Cardinals in a minute. Is it the last 2 weeks of the season, or, Brad, they're going to go to the postseason? Can you tell yet, Jody?
Well, yeah, I mean, I personally, I think a lot of people are thinking that they will right now. They're in a wild card spot. They've occupied a wild card spot for quite some time now. But, you know, it's September and you just can't take anything for granted. You cannot. Milwaukee's in a different spot. We just saw them. They were up by 7-8 games in the NL Central, and no one was really hot on their tail. And, you know, that's not the way it is in the NL wild card race. Yep. You've got the Mets, the Braves, you're jockeying in position there with the Padres, Padres have continued to stay very hot in this. Philadelphia did beat the Mets, which was a good thing. And, you know, it could potentially go right down to the wire. And so you have to be prepared for that, as this team, they know what that's like from last year. It's a team last year that didn't know, of course. They have the benefit now of knowing what they're capable of. Back then, they were just trying to get in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a couple of friends who are season ticket holders, actually from day one back in 98, season ticket holders. And they wrote the other night to me during the Brandon Pfaadt onslaught that this is it. This is the last game we're going to be at, because they're not going to make the postseason. They're done. They're finished.
Wow. I know. Come on. That's just one game. It's okay.
And I thought back to our conversation last week about Paul Sewald and Jordan Montgomery. Okay. And that got to get something out of them. Well, Sunday, Sewald put on the injured list with a neck. Montgomery, now, is he going to be someone that's going to be counted on to step in there and make something happen? 2 weeks to go. What do you think, Jody?
I mean, yeah, I think that Jordan Montgomery has to step up in a big way. I mean, Paul Sewald, I'm not sure what's going on, you know, not having been there on Sunday. You know, I was over there Saturday.
Yeah.
Was it Friday? I'm getting my days all mixed up. Saturday, I think I was over there. But
I love picking up with you.
I'm not there every day, it gets confusing. But, you know, I don't know. Oh, I lost you there. Shoot. There you
go. You're all right. You're all right. You're all right.
Problem with this.
It's live. This is what people want. They want us to kind of crash and burn up.
Go
ahead. Keep at it.
Camera falls and you never know. But yeah, like, okay, so I can't predict what's going to happen with Paul Sewald right now. If he's not totally healthy, you know, hopefully he'll be back. But Jordan Montgomery is going to play a big role here. You know, every start is very big right now. And I might be crazy, but I think he's capable of it. We're going to find out. I saw him be way too good of a pitcher last year and the year before that to just write him off. So I am interested to see it. I think it's going to be good television, as we say, right? I think it's going to be exciting to watch, but I hope he's going to, you know, and the series in Colorado is huge, because while the Rockies are a team that is, you know, barely recognizable, some of the names are new. Antonio Senzatella is going to start off game one here. He's just returning for the first time all year from injury. But it's Colorado, and crazy things happen here. And it's certainly not a place where pitchers can be efficient easily. So that's a challenge. You've had to really dig into your bullpen all weekend long against Milwaukee, which was not ideal. And now you're coming to Colorado.
Jody Jackson with us for a couple of minutes, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. Jody's Gems. We appreciate E.D. Marshall and their support in bringing Jody Jackson to us every week. She joins us on the road with the Diamondbacks this week. Okay, I saw you Sunday at the Cardinal game. You were on the move doing your thing. Pretty easy to say, most complete effort we've seen out of the franchise in a long, 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 long time. But I want to take it to this question with you. Most complete effort out of Kyler Murray you've ever seen?
I would say so. I mean, there were some games when you dig back into 2020 and 2021 where he was very good and very efficient. Passer rating was high. Completion percentage was high. But yesterday was kind of everything. It was everything you wanted to see. And I think number one was that first touchdown pass to Marvin Harrison Jr., which is making the decision, making the commitment. He did, you know, that was a, you know, we all saw that next gen stat, right? Most improbable touchdown of 2024, because you really had to look at the replay, especially us in the press box. You know, it was harder to, you had to really look at the really good replay to see how hard that catch was. But the good news is that Kyler Murray threw the ball. He threw the ball to MHJ. I don't know why I want to give him a nickname or something, like besides Marv. I guess he's just Maserati Marv, or he's Marv, but it'll evolve, I'm sure.
Coach calls him 18. He just calls him.
That's evil too, yeah. So he makes the catch. It's a great throw. It's a great catch. It was a good decision. It was on time. It was on target. It was everything that you want to see. And so for Kyler, it just went on. And then, you know, he made some other spectacular. I mean, the touchdown to Elijah Higgins was ridiculous, just because, you know, he's got Jared Burst diving at his feet. It almost, it was crazy to watch, because we know how elusive he is. They, you know, round and around and around. The telestrator looks like a scribbling toddler, just circles and then he sets his feet and throws a great pass to Higgins. And so I think we saw everything that we know Kyler Murray is capable of. It's just the decision-making. For me, it was the decision-making that was really on point there. And then it's hard to ignore the running game, which he was a part of, mm-hmm. The running game, 231 yards. But yeah, Kyler Murray, I mean, it was probably, for me, the best that I've seen him.
So, and I'll get into the other offensive stuff in a minute, but my biggest takeaway was you held the Rams, and I get it. Cooper Kupp gets hurt, and their offensive line was beat up. Sometimes it is when you meet a team. Sometimes what you see in September isn't what it looks like in December in the NFL. I'm not going to take that away from the defense. They went out there, and they held a team to 10 points. I have no question that this team is going to be able to score points. I've had big questions about whether they could control teams offensively. So talk about the defense, if you could, a little bit, and just what was your takeaway defensively? The Buda Baker play on fourth down set the tone very early in that game.
Yeah, it really did. I'm just kind of going back through my notes. I mean, they didn't allow them to get anything going.
Right.
Great. I mean, Kyren Williams, I'm looking. Actually, what's interesting is the very first play of the game, as I'm looking back at my chart, and then Kyren Williams ran for 8 yards, and that had to be his longest of the day. Mm-hmm. He only ran for 25 yards. This was the guy that tore them up last year. And then so next thing you know, Williams, it was a negative play on the next play. They had a bunch of tackles for loss. And then all of a sudden, they're in third down. And so because they were so good on first and second down, you know, at times the Rams were in some third and manageables, but they never got it done. Their third down rate was horrible. So, and you're right, the little fourth and two, they thought we're going to throw a little short pass here. We're going to throw over to Cooper Kupp. Buda Baker was right there. And you're right, Brad, it really set a tone. So, and then next thing you know, Gardeck has a sack a little bit later on the third and five. Dennis Gardeck ended up with three sacks. Zayvon Collins with a sack. I loved the effort. And it was also pretty good on the back end. When you see those sacks, it's the pressure up front, but it's also good coverage and being physical with the receivers. But clearly the Rams were already down Puka Nacua. Now without Kupp, I mean, I like Tyler Johnson, but, you know, you're really, you know, they have Robinson, Atwell. Now they're really thin there. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because I don't know how bad the Cooper Kupp injury is, but, you know, Matthew Stafford is capable of a lot of things, but he needs some weapons.
I thought it was telling that Matthew Stafford was still out on the field. And that had to be Matthew Stafford saying, I'm staying in here. I'm not going to walk off of this field. You know, it's week two of the season and you're down 31 points and he is still out there trying to do something, like work on things. So again, it's when you play a team early in the season and the next time they play him, Nacua may be available. Whatever it may be, it's the defense did what they were supposed to do. Defense plays like that, this team is going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because stopping the run is paramount. When Detroit comes in, you know, we all know they want to pound the ball. David Montgomery is the guy that can do that. Their line, their physicality. But yeah, I mean, just looking at other names on this list, when you look at the defense, I thought Mac Wilson played really well. Kaiser White, you know, like I said, Buddha can't be underrated what he did yesterday. He was all over the place. He was there in the run game. He was there in the pass game. You know, we saw Max Melton on the field. I really liked what I saw from all these guys. And hopefully you're right. Hopefully this is the beginning, Brad, of where this defense is proving themselves week in and week out. Today was a big step. I think in week one, we saw some good things, but Josh Allen is such a difficult challenge.
Sure.
And when you see Josh Allen hurdling over Buda Baker, which was a great decision by him, but that just tells you how difficult a matchup that is. He's a one-man wrecking crew where you're not going to face that most weeks. They're going to face some good quarterbacks, but defensively, I think this was a week that showed us a little bit more of what they're capable of.
Jody Jackson's Gems for a couple of minutes, brought to you by Edie Marshall. We appreciate Edie Marshall Jewelers and their support. Jody joins us every Monday. Before I get over into Detroit, Marvin Harrison Jr., raving is, I don't know. I can go beyond raving. I saw Anquan Boldin. I saw Larry Fitzgerald, rookie years, obviously, for both Q and Larry. Yesterday, Sunday, was special to see what he was all about.
It really was. And you're right. When you mention those names, what does it mean? It means great players, elite players, players that were not always open and still caught the ball, players that had terrific runs after the catches, players that wouldn't go down. And it means that the team was winning. I mean, let's face it, there were two spurts of that for Larry. There was one for Anquan. You know, we saw it in 08. Mm. We saw it in, you know, those Carson Palmer years. And so as great as the individual effort is, it's, you know, can Marvin Harrison Jr. be the type of player that can lift this team up in their most crucial moments? Now, on Sunday, we saw it in the first quarter. He got everything done that he really needed to. It was much different than the week before where everyone was questioning why didn't Kyler throw it to him in the fourth quarter. What we're going to learn, though, is what is fourth quarter Marv like? What is that connection between Kyler and Marv like? So, but it's just the beginning. And I think when you saw Paris Johnson Jr. lift him up doing the celebration that they had for so many years at Ohio State, well, not so many years. We know that, you know, college is getting shorter and shorter for these guys, but yeah, that celebration, that connection, they had big smiles on their faces, and it was a big day for that young man, Marvin Harrison. You know, I'm happy for him too, just charting his own path, because it's part of the story, right? And as media, we tell the story, who his father is. But now let's just talk about, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. as his own player, his own man, and you like what you see from him, especially he was lamenting the four incompletions that Kyler had were all to him. And he was not too happy about that. So you could see already that he is kind of a perfectionist.
I liked how they got him involved very early. I feel like the great ones, they can just show up. But when you're in the position of wide receiver, the only way you're going to be great is if you're fed. And Kyler fed him early. Drew Pensick fed him early. So that he was in the rhythm of the game, which I liked, rather than a Buffalo. Just, you can say all day long what Buffalo did took him out of the game. I don't buy that necessarily. And that was 2 weeks ago now. So as they get ready for Detroit, I would like to see this be a thing where early in the game, let's get going. Let's not sit here and wait.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first touchdown, like we talked about, you know, Kyler just had to throw a great ball there. And trust. The trust is a big word. The second touchdown, though, that was a great scheme. It looked like a run play. It was kind of run. Marvin's over there alone on the side. He's kind of kind of a deep over where he's cruising through the middle. He's running his route, and then he takes off as he crosses the field and goes upfield. And that was a little bit of deception. So that was a little bit of, okay, they're scheming to get him open. But I think it can work both ways, Brad. It can be where, you know, he's covered and you're going to him. Another play that was telling on, you know, is Kyler going to throw to these guys and trust them to make the play was Trey McBride, who basically had two guys right there on him. And it was a great ball that only Trey could catch. And Trey, of course, we know he's a big target. And he made the catch. So that was another really good play. McBride was more involved yesterday too. But I hope you're right. I hope this is the start of, you know, where the game plan is to Marvin early and often. I mean, that's how great players become great players. They don't sort of wait for things to fall their way. They make something happen. Sure. And that's on everybody though. It's not just one guy. It's not like Marv can do that himself. It has to be Drew Petsing. It has to be Kyler Murray. And honestly, the offensive line did a great job, you know, protecting Kyler yesterday and running the ball. All of those things, if we see more of that going hand in hand and everyone working collectively together, yeah, Marvin's going to have a big year.
Yeah, I mean, the balance offensively was tremendous. You know, James Conner gets over 100 yards and was a factor. And there was creativity, there was balance, there was Kyler doing his thing with his legs. So all the way around, it was a solid victory, and there was no facet of the game. Special teams were great. There was nothing that you looked at and said, man, we got to get this cleaned up or get that cleaned up for Detroit. To that end, Detroit comes in this week. What are you expecting from the Lions on Sunday?
Well, like I said, the Lions are a very physical team. Now, what we saw Sunday from them was Jared Goff making some costly mistakes. So I think that, you know, that's one thing this defense can look at is say, how do we continue that trend for Jared Goff? I think, again, though, their running game is scary at times. You don't want to let them get going, let them get momentum going downhill on you, because they will absolutely pound the football. And then defensively, I think they're a very sound team, you know, and we know Dan Campbell, what he's done for that franchise and, you know, getting them a playoff win last year, and just the mentality that their playoff, that their team plays with, the mentality and the physical nature of the game. I think it's going to be a really physical game. I always laugh when people say that because, you know, football is a physical game.
Right,
but
right.
I feel like it's a lot of those matchups, like when, you know, the Rams, I mean, for many years in this division, you know, it was the Rams were like that, and the Niners. And I think that, you know, Detroit is going to bring that type of football, and it's going to be, okay, can you match that? And for Kyler Murray, a lot of it is going to be, once again, can he make those good decisions in key moments? Can they keep a lot of the pressure off of him? And, can James Conner establish himself in this game? Because, we talked so much about the explosive pass game, but James Conner did a great job on Sunday. And, I just expect that from him now, really. What he can do. And it's not just James Conner, it's Trey Benson. Amari DiMercato ripped off a long run as well. And so everything was working for the Cardinals on Sunday. I just think Detroit is going to pose some different problems. And, you know, I'm going to be interested to see what they can do against the Lions secondary. But again, this is the perfect game to come off of, because I saw Kyler playing with a lot more confidence.
Yeah.
And that fuels the decisions. It fuels his ability to run. It really just makes everything easier.
Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. She joins us every week. We appreciate you. Safe travels. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Brad. We'll see you then.
And now it's the man who sleeps very seldom, John Wilner. The one and only Wilner Hotline, who was all over the expansion of the Pac-12 last week. He gave us an extra bonus round on Thursday, and you look like hell that day. Can I just say that right off? Which was fine. It's because, look, how much have you slept in the last week?
Well, Wednesday night, I slept for 2 hours on the couch in the garage. Garage is where I go sometimes to work, just to not distract the family or be distracted. And I spent all day Saturday in my garage, you know, with multiple screens going. But Wednesday night, I just thought, you know what? I need to get into the cave. And so I worked. I slept from about 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, partly because the official announcement of the Pac-12 expansion was it 6 a.m. Pacific, right? They, for whatever reason, they wanted to do it early, and that contributed to the condensed time frame for work. But hey, it's, you know, it's big news for college sports out West, and you got to do what you got to do.
Okay, so let's break down this. You wrote, and it's up on our site. John, of course, nationally syndicated with what he does. It's on our site this morning, but I'll go down the path of what has transpired, give some context to everything that took place the other day, moving forward to here on Monday morning as we're talking.
Well, the Pac-12 is now officially going to live on past the summer of 2026. There was some question as to whether the conference would survive this transition, but with the addition of the four Mountain West schools plus Washington State and Oregon State, and they will add at least two more. They have to add two more to get to eight. That is the NCAA requirement by the summer of 2026. There will be an 8-team, 9-team, 10-team Pac-12 living on. The Mountain West future is very much up in the air. The remaining schools that were not are not moving up to the Pac-12, it's questionable how much media value they have, and media value is kind of the centerpiece of any conference structure. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely to be worked out. Where the Pac-12 is going to turn for the number 7, 8, and maybe 9 and 10 members, we'll see. I think they're going to look east, see if they can get a Memphis, a South Florida, Tulane, Texas, San Antonio. Those schools are in the American Athletic Conference, but they do have value, media value. They would give the Pac-12 a bigger footprint. They would give the Pac-12 more central time kickoff windows. So we'll see. They could also end up raiding the Mountain West for a few more schools. That's all TBD, but they will assuredly leave two spots at the table for Cal and Stanford in case the ACC implodes in the next 24, 36 months. And that is possible because of the lawsuits. Washington State and Oregon State very much want to have a landing spot for Cal and Stanford in case they need to reverse course.
Okay, and that let's go through some yeses and nos. And if you want to give a line or two as to why, it's fine. But we'll just make this part brief.
I like this, sure.
Will there ever be a Pac-12? Will there be 12 schools?
Unlikely, but possible, especially if you expand your time frame, right? Everybody thinks a Super League is coming in football. That could shake things up. I would say the rest of the decade, it's probably Pac-8 to 9 or 10. And they were, by the way, they're planning to keep the name Pac-12 just because of the brand association. I mean, the Big Ten's got 18. The Pac-12 could have 8 or 10. I think if you're talking about an 11th or 12th member, it's got to be 3, 5, 10 years away.
Did George Kliavkoff screw this up too?
I mean, he has a big hand in the entire situation. There's no doubt about that. He was presented with the idea of adding the top schools in the Mountain West back in the spring of 2023. You add the four that are joining now, plus Washington State, Oregon State, and you do what you can to try to keep Cal and Stanford. And so this would have been the backup plan in the event of a Pac-12 implosion. He basically ignored the idea. So Washington State and Oregon State have had to kind of get it out of the filing cabinet from the basement of the conference. I will say also, the Pac-12, every strategic decision over the course of 10 years, the Pac-12 screwed up, not only on Larry Scott and George Kliavkoff, but the presidents. In the last 13 months, every strategic decision the Pac-12 has had, which is basically means Washington State and Oregon State, they have made the right move. If the Pac-12 had made as many right moves as Washington State and Oregon State have, it would be thriving right now as the conference that we remember.
Nevada and UNLV together, not together.
There's a lot of debate about that. I don't think that they are tied together in an unbreakable fashion, but it's enough of a snag that it is a short-term hurdle. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is the only reason UNLV is not part of this first wave of expansion. That was the first thing everybody thought. Why not UNLV? Good market, important sports city, great recruiting ground, makes a lot of sense, right? there's enough of a snag with Reno, the Reno campus and the state system, that they decided to move and look east first. But I do think eventually, push comes to shove, UNLV will be able to break away from Reno if the Pac-12 does indeed want to add the UNLV campus.
Why go to South Florida or Tulane when you could go to Texas State, which is showing, as ASU saw the other night, a very big commitment to athletics, and UT San Antonio have the Texas footprint, rather than trying to do this cross-the-country branding? Is the cross-the-country branding really that effective? Look what Indiana did to UCLA the other night. Absolutely jack-stomped and embarrassed them. But I know it gives you the LA TV market. I understand that. But from a competitive standpoint, John, why not just go as far as Texas and call it a day?
I think they may end up doing that. But they're initially going to see about Memphis and South Florida, Tulane. Those are good markets. And also competitively, if you get Memphis and South Florida, you have undercut the American, and you are, because those are the best, basically the best teams in the American. And then you are clearly the fifth best conference in the pecking order. Mm-hmm. And that is something that they are considering seriously, is the competitive balance in football as it relates to the playoff bid, which there's an automatic bid to the best group of five. The Pac-12, if they get could get Memphis and South Florida, the American is, you know, is in big trouble, and the Pac-12 is clearly the fifth best, and I think that's something that they are looking at seriously. Tulane also gives you the academics. South Florida gives you, they give you kickoff times, they give you access to recruiting, but I do think, and the Texas system, UTSA, Texas system, resource-rich, football crazy, makes a lot of sense. Texas State, I would say, is probably on the B level of schools, but certainly on the radar.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes, just going through all the line items that have popped into my head in the last 72 hours or so as to the Pac-12 expansion. Some of my questions may be way off the rails, like this one. Do you think that the presidents at Arizona State and Arizona are looking at themselves in the mirror saying, we should have just waited? You think it's too early to have a judgment on that? Or is it, John, you can't crawl inside of Michael Crow's brain and know what's going on?
I'm not sure you could escape once you got in. But I do not believe that they are having second thoughts. For the Arizona schools, the Big 12 makes a lot of sense. Yes. In some ways, that they are very Big 12-ish, right? It digs into the WAC roots that both schools have, geographically fits. You know, institutionally, there's a lot of alignment, and the Big 12 is providing them with stability. There's a, you know, 7 years of stability, $30 million a year in broadcast revenue coming in at Fox and ESPN as your partners. I don't think there's, and certainly for Arizona, the basketball competition is critical. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that they're having second thoughts. If you're at which of the 10 that have left are having second thoughts, I don't think Cal and Stanford ever really wanted to go to the ACC. You know, they would have much preferred the Pac-12 to stay together. Is there buyer's remorse? Probably not, but they certainly are wary of the political situation in the ACC, the fact it could implode, and the fact that they may be seeking another home in a few years. And by the way, their first choice would be the Big Ten. If the ACC implodes, they are going to beg on their hands and knees to get into the Big Ten. And if they can't do that, then maybe the Pac-12.
What I find, what in my little mind, the way that things work, I love the fact that Cal is going to play Florida State this week, because Cal's 3-0. If they go to Florida State and deal them a loss, and Florida State's like, we don't want to be in this conference, and oh, by the way, we're 0-4. And we brought in this new group. So I'm looking at this week's game, and you know, Justin Wilcox is doing a great job up there, John. It's I find all this stuff, like if the Pac-12 had just stayed as is, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun as what we're seeing right now.
It's a lot of fun seeing Washington State beat Washington, given the circumstances.
Yes, absolutely.
It's fascinating. It's fun. It's unprecedented. We're seeing the death and rebirth of a conference in real time that is in a lot of ways unprecedented. As for Cal, Yeah, 3-0. Justin Wilcox, very good coach. What makes Cal a little different than the other schools is COVID really wrecked Cal for two seasons and not one, because the restrictions in Berkeley were so severe that their 21 season. Remember, Justin Wilcox won 8 games and including a bowl game in the 2019 season. They get wrecked by COVID in 2020 and in 2021, and now he's kind of got things back. They went to a bowl game last year. They're 3-0. They are only, I think, a 3-point underdog in Tallahassee. Who would have ever figured Cal would go to Tallahassee as a field goal underdog? They're going to probably end up in a bowl game. The ACC is wide open. They're going to be competitive. That is, yes, certainly a very interesting subplot to have emerged from all this. And plaintiff number one in the ACC is 0-3.
What did you make out of UCLA and Indiana?
Well, UCLA is not ready for the Big Ten. I thought that was the case all along. We saw that. I mean, Hawaii just got run off the field by Sam Houston State. So the fact that the Bruins struggled to beat Hawaii tells you a lot. They get run off the field in their Big Ten opener at home, blitzed by Indiana. Now, I can't even say this with a straight face because it's so ridiculous. Yeah. UCLA's next three, at LSU, home against Oregon, at Penn State. So UCLA is 1-4. They are staggering through their first month in Big Ten play. That said, in fairness to UCLA, moving into the Big Ten, hiring Deshaun Foster, these were all longer-term plays for the future of their athletic department. Judging them after all of this, after 1 month, I can see why people would do it. It's really, they're taking a much longer view. We'll see. I remain convinced that by the end of the decade, UCLA is going to, you know, the evidence for UCLA returning to a Pac-12 is going to be pretty substantial. I don't think that the Big Ten is going to work for them long haul.
So this Saturday, USC and Michigan, litmus test, these young whippersnappers from the Pac-12 or these old timers from the Pac-12 come into our conference, and we're going to show them what we're made of. You know, Purdue got just destroyed by Notre Dame. They go to Oregon State this week. So there's some games that you have a little bit of a crossover or that are intriguing to me that I look at and say, let's just see how this all works out.
For sure. USC, Michigan, litmus test for Michigan in a lot of ways. This is USC's, I looked it up, first trip to the Big House since the 50s. Right? The schools have obviously played a lot in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've only played two games in history that weren't in the Rose Bowl. And USC has not been in Ann Arbor in 70 years. This game explains everything about what we're seeing with conference realignment, though. The reason Fox wanted USC in the Big Ten is because of the visuals, sure, because of the interest that everybody will have in this game. USC running out of the tunnel in their colors in the Big House is a visual that Fox pays hundreds of millions of dollars for, right? That is why we're getting this, the whole realignment, because the big brands on broadcast television are what move college football. So in that regard, it explains everything. On a more immediate level, it is an elimination game for Michigan in for the playoff, and it will substantiate USC's case as a real contender in the Big Ten. So there's a lot of layers to this game. I'm looking forward to it. CBS had the first pick of Big Ten games this week. It took USC Michigan for obvious reasons. 12:30 Pacific. This is the kind of game that people across the country tune in for.
Yeah, no question. No question. John Woolner with us for a couple of minutes. Let's go in state. Who is in bigger trouble? Which fan base should be more concerned? Arizona State's fan base is just doing backflips and cartwheels. Are they out in front of themselves a little too much? U of A, they've got broken ankles, jumping off the bandwagon, and they're already talking about basketball season, which is par for the course in Tucson.
Yes.
Fan bases took different approaches or have seen different results so far this season. What do you make out of U of A, ASU?
It's all based on the preseason expectations. Arizona's top 25, figuring they're going to contend for the Big 12 title. They haven't played a complete game, right? Even against NAU and New Mexico, there were flaws. And boy, that second half, especially in Manhattan on Friday night, lots of problems. And that wasn't a conference game, but it does suggest that Arizona's going to have a lot of trouble in the Big 12. So their fans are like, oh boy, it's, you know, this might be harder than we expected this season. And that said, they're 2-1.
Sure.
ASU, on the other hand, expectations so low to start the season, picked last in the Big 12. And here they are 3-0. Sure, everybody's flying high. I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but I think it's important.
It's important
to add a little bit of context.
Sure, a lot of context.
Wyoming is 0-3 and lost at home to Idaho. Mississippi State just got blown off its own home field by Toledo.
And paid Toledo to show up.
Paid Toledo to come in there and kick their butt 41-17. Mississippi State stinks. Wyoming stinks. Texas State, best team ASU has played. That was a good win. Hey, going on the road, I don't care who you're playing, Sun Belt, Big 12, whoever it is, going on the road on a Thursday is hard when you have not had the previous Saturday off. So that's a good win for ASU. The two home wins, not great. But it's all relative to expectations. It's all relative to where things were last year. ASU undeniably has made a lot of progress. Should be competitive in the Big 12. They going to get three more wins for a bowl bid? I don't know. The Big 12 schedule is very difficult. But certainly you see progress from Kelly Dillingham, and that is the most important thing. That's what ASU fans should take heart in, is the progress. Arizona fans, they're not seeing the same thing that they did at the end of last year, where Arizona was one of the hottest teams in the country. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to keep that momentum going over the course of the next year. It all is based on expectations, but certainly from a fan perspective, the roles have reversed.
Well, I'll just put it like this. If they win at Texas Tech, and Texas Tech might put 70 on them, and ASU might score 71 because Texas Tech's defense is terrible, right?
Harold, didn't they give up 50 or 60 points to Houston Christian?
Yeah, I mean, they're just not good. So here's the thing. Regardless of the outcome, ASU comes home and they have Kansas, and 6 days later they have Utah. Okay? Kansas isn't good. We know Utah is really good. Two home games, if they win at Lubbock, this place will go crazy because they're so starved to win and be 4-0. Even if they come up short, unless it's a door getting blown off, I think that Tempe is going to have a buzz around it. Kenny Dillingham has been preaching the right message in a market where all you have to do is win a little bit and people are going to get excited. Just a little bit.
Yep.
You pointed out they were picked to finish dead flat last, and they haven't played like a dead flat last team. Mississippi State does stink. Doesn't matter. It's an SEC school that they beat at home to the fan base. They don't even look at the opponents. You and I, we're not being Debbie Downers. We're just being a little bit more tap the brakes. Let's enjoy this. Given all the nonsense we've seen through the years, that's all.
Absolutely. And you know, Kenny Dillingham has worked tirelessly in a very difficult situation that became more difficult after he took the job, by the way, thanks to his administration. Yes. And you have to admire, the guy is relentless in his enthusiasm and energy, and the program is better for his presence. There is no doubt about that. And if they can go to Texas Tech and find a way to win, and they could very well win that game, good for them. They're 4-0. Kansas is having some trouble, like you said. ASU could be 5-0. Great. They, you know what? They deserve it. You win the games in front of you. Absolutely. And it doesn't matter that some of the schools they have played aren't any good. They're going to be 5-0. Great for Dillingham. Good for the fans who have stuck with the program. The players who have stuck with the program through all the difficult times. Great. These are the kind of things that make college football great. And if you work hard and you've got the right attitude like Dillingham does, and you are willing to just not only stick your hands in the dirt, stick your face in the dirt like he has for these last almost, 2 years he's been on the job now, 21 months. Good for him.
I put this out the other day. He's got some Bruce Pearl in him. He's got some Eric Musselman in him. And what I love is down here, it's, pitchforks up, go Devils, even when they stink. And he's not about that. which I like. He's just, we're not good. We stink. We're this, we're that. And it's not the false stuff that you put out through us. It's just, no, we're just not that good yet. And I appreciate just the brutal honesty, because we don't get enough of that in this day and age from coaches, media, and all that.
He does have that way about him. And that's part of, I think that's part of the appeal, because you know that he's also honest with his players.
Yes.
And they see, the players see through the coaches right to their core. And what they see in Dillingham is a guy who's going to be honest with them. He's going to hold them accountable, but he's going to hold himself accountable as well. And that is huge for players. It makes them want to play for him. And that's part of the reason he's been able to do this.
What about Jed? I'll get you out of here off this. So I don't know why Arizona fans like to make a big deal out of hating on Jed Fish when their own team got beat up on Friday night. But I've heard and seen a lot of that. It's almost like, well, we didn't get just jack stomped on national television on Fox by K-State, but ha, 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 look at Jed Fish. Is Jed Fish not the right hire for Washington? Or, as I've said, he's inherited an empty cupboard up there, and Kalen DeBoer got out before it got rough.
I think he did inherit an empty cupboard, right? They have got 21 or 22 new starters. Sorry, 20 or 21 new starters. So it was going to take time, especially with the offensive line, the cohesiveness up front. They did blow it. I mean, that they had one play to win that game, fourth down, and Fish called a terrible play.
Horrible call.
He took accountability for that. Good for him. I have never been convinced he was exactly the right fit for Washington. We'll see. It's way too early to tell. We'll see. We could get into the fact that he might be on the short list for an opening in his alma mater that could surface at Florida here in the next couple of weeks.
No, John. No. That job's going to Nick Saban, if I'm to believe the fans. That job's going to Urban Meyer, if I'm to believe the fans. Yes. You know, we have got Nick Saban in our back pocket.
Yes, well, I'll believe that when I see that. Nick Saban is not taking the Florida job. Right. Billy Napier could get fired any minute. We're on the Napier watch.
Yes.
Lane Kiffin is a name to watch for that, for sure. Florida's a better job than Ole Miss. Jed Fish is a Florida alum. You can't discount the possibility that he would be on their short list. We'll see how things go for him at Washington. I understand the Arizona fans' perspective. They feel like he completely deceived them by his commitment to the university, and then he just let. Is Fish more despicable in that regard of giving a false impression than any other coach? I don't think so. They all say, you know, I'm committed, and then they leave, right? And if you look at Fish's background, he's never been any place more than 2 or 3 years. You just have to assume that they're going to say one thing when they mean another. I can understand Arizona fans feeling that way, but Fish really isn't that much different than any other coach.
I haven't been contacted. I haven't heard from them. Has your agent been contacted?
Yeah.
Agent.
Yeah.
You know that?
I get it. And look, Arizona did a great job keeping McMillan and Fifita and Manu and the core of that team. All credit to Brent Brennan. He's got a pretty good roster. He's got to figure it out here. They played very well on offense and poorly on defense. In the opener, reverse was true. Second game, neither was effective at Kansas State, and they have shown a decided inability to slow down running quarterbacks. They had trouble with Avery Johnson. They have trouble against New Mexico. The Big 12's got some running quarterbacks. That is near the top of their list. They got to get more. It can't just be McMillan and Fifita. They can't be a clone of Colorado. Colorado is all Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. Arizona needs to be more than Fifita and McMillan. Got to get the running game going. Got to get more players involved in the passing game. The Big 12 has got a lot of good teams and a lot of good coaches. If Arizona's going to contend, they got to make some fixes quickly.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate you as always. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brett.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.